All right, lawyer talk. They do not teach you that in law school. Off the record, on the air, we are here with They Don't Teach You That in Law School edition. We got Bella back at the table. Troy's with us. Both of you guys working in the office now. Now, Bella's not employed by our side of it, but working with Paul Scarcella, great lawyer, does what we do. So we got a good team up there. The idea here, obviously, we are taking on topics. These are two law students. We're taking on topics that they're maybe they cover them a little bit, but then there's the other backside of the story, the stuff that really happens in real life. And today we're going to talk about Back to the Future, Cocaine Island, and DeLoreans.
Okay.
So what does all that have to do? What is all that spell? That all spells entrapment. You guys asked me about entrapment. So go ahead. And we'll connect all those dots here in a second. But
I mean, the main thing I just want to know is kind of how entrapment works. We didn't really touch on it at all.
No, not really.
And in my head, I was thinking like undercover cops and all that. I don't know. Just all it sounds like entrapment to me. So I just don't really, I don't even know the beginning or the start on it.
Yeah. It always kind of confused me like what counts as entrapment and what doesn't. Do you remember that series about the Catching a Predator?
Oh, with Chris Hansen?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite things. Yeah.
So that wouldn't count as entrapment, right?
I think it does.
You know, this is like the Dateline guy who shows up and
take a seat.
Grab a seat. And he's looking around.
I used to love watching.
Yeah, is he entrapped? So, entrapment. Let me tell you, I'm trying to think if I've ever had a real entrapment defense in my 30 years, and I don't think I have. Now, I've had something else called entrapment by estoppel, which I'll talk about. It's a whole different game, but similar, but totally different. But entrapment. So, take a guess. Why is that not entrapment? Why is the Dateline episode not entrapment? Because it feels like it.
Right. Probably because the men like voluntarily would message those girls on their own and they didn't. Like, I think the one example they gave us in school was like some guy was walking past. I don't remember, actually. It's like a whole setup for. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I feel the Dateline one's different. Like, you were right. He engages the girls first.
Right.
I think it'd be different if the guy was just a normal guy and the girl just kept messaging him first. Like, you know, like maybe she tried like 20 times and he finally like responded, you know. Maybe I think that would be more entrapment. The cops are really trying that hard to get this specific guy. That's right. How I would view it.
And probably just because he's taking the initiative to like drive and meet this person. It's not like as easily like accessible if he was just like, I don't know.
Well, you're onto like it. You're over the target. So generally speaking, and I'll look up the Ohio language. I got it. I haven't read it. I'll look up the Ohio language in a second, read it out loud, the legal ease. But generally speaking, the impetus to commit the crime, in other words, your intent to commit the crime and even the thought about committing the crime has to come from the police. The police have talked you into it. And otherwise, you wouldn't have done it, and which also means that you weren't predisposed to commit the crime. So there's really those two elements that are sort of related. And the Ohio Supreme Court has said, entrapment occurs where criminal design originates from government officials who implant in the mind of an innocent person the predisposition to commit the alleged offense and induce its commission in order to prosecute. So that adds a third element, like which is they do it with the intent of prosecuting somebody. And so what you're talking about, like the Dateline scenario, we'll just sort of take that apart. In the Dateline scenario, the guy who is the entrapee, the defendant, he is doing this already. Like these sort of catch the predator shows, and the police do this, by the way, they set up these things all the time and they do it a lot for, prostitution, or now we call it, child trafficking or sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the defendant is already out with his radar on looking for these kids. Cause he's a creepo predator person who wants to do it. And the fact that he happened to catch the lure of the cops, you know, or bite the lure of the cops. Yeah. I mean, that he can't argue that he wasn't predisposed to go do this. And then, you know, the impetus of the crime is his. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem with those. That'll never be entrapment. Although everybody feels like, well, this is crap, man. I wouldn't have done. Yeah.
Those guys are also like in those like chat rooms already there.
That's what I was going to say. They like took the initiative to make an account.
The evidence of it is always overwhelming.
Yeah. Like, right? Whoa,
he was searching for a 14-year-old girl or he was searching for 8-year-old. I mean, look, there's if you're weak of heart, if you're faint of heart, don't do this job. Don't take on criminal defense, because we deal with this stuff and it sucks. Mm-hmm. But we deal with it on a professional level. So we sort of joke about it, but we do have to deal with this stuff. And I've represented lots of those guys. And the impetus to commit the crime in the Dateline scenario is on the defendant. So we immediately it's gone, right? So where the criminal design originates from the government, well, that didn't happen. You know, all the government did was just hang out. It's like fish eating. Mm-hmm. They bit the false lure instead of the real one. And, you know, it makes you wonder, and that's a sort of awful scenario. Like, how many times does it happen where it's not the government?
Yeah.
So, you know.
I remember actually in class, Barnhart was telling us that they did one of these Dateline catch scenarios, and they actually convinced somebody, I'm pretty sure from the prosecutor's office, who was doing it. He was actually like the predator. Mm-hmm. They convinced him to come to meet the kid on a field trip at the state house. They arrested him, and then as they were trying to pass a bill on it, like prayed to the guy in front of the General Assembly, like,
yeah,
that, I was like, that is insane. That,
see, I don't agree with that.
I don't think they should do that, but like, it was insane.
The problem with that, look, I get what they're doing. This is not to defend sexual predators, but think about that. If I call that the touchdown dance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So they made too much of a dance out of it. And think of the danger. Like if I'm advising the police and during that sting operation, I would say, wait a minute, you've got a predator that is you've engaged in, and you're reeling this guy in, you're going to make the arrest. Why would you risk doing this at the state house on a field trip? You don't need to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have this otherwise. You're only doing it for ego and publicity.
Yeah.
At that point. And that is not needed. So look, you don't need it. You don't need it for the prosecution. Get the prosecution, because isn't the goal to get the bad guy?
Yeah.
And how much, like, is it more likely that the bad guy gets scared off by meeting at a field trip at the state house or like some other private location, or like a McDonald's or something? I've had him at McDonald's.
I just think it's kind of crazy that somebody would, you know, willing to go, but they can convince somebody to go there out of all the places. I know. Like, that I was just like, that's insane.
It shows you how predisposed that guy is to commit the crime. I mean, it shows you.
Yeah, it's not entrapment at that point. Yeah. I think, like, if you're willing
at all. So anyway, the reason I brought up Back to the Future and cocaine and DeLoreans is because Back to the Future really has nothing to do with it, but other than DeLorean, one of the most famous entrapment cases is the DeLorean case back in the 80s. So the government sort of DeLorean, you guys know what DeLoreans are, right? They're cars.
Yeah.
Right. So the DeLorean built these cars, and they were actually pretty cool cars. And he used to be a GM exec, I think the CEO, and he spun off the DeLorean Motor Company and built these DeLoreans. And he got in financial trouble, and the government got involved, and they tried to get him into a cocaine deal. I believe it was a cocaine deal. And that you can go on YouTube still and watch the old black and white surveillance footage of the government trying to convince DeLorean to engage in this drug transaction. And I think it was eventually thrown out for entrapment. And it's one of the most famous entrapment cases of our time. And then there's another one. The reason I brought up Cocaine Island, there's a great, I think it was Netflix. I'll have to look it up. But there's a documentary about a guy who got involved in some drugs and whatever. Watch the documentary, but they're pretty good exposés on entrapment and how it works. The DeLorean, there's lots on the DeLorean case. You can see it, and there's people have talked about it. So,
where is the Cocaine Island?
I don't remember. I think it was on.
Asking for a friend.
Asking for a friend. I don't remember where Cocaine Island was. We actually did a very this is like the third iteration of Lawyer Talk. But go check it out with the old crew. We did a whole episode. In fact, we'll link it wherever we link stuff
trips.
We can do a. I'll link the episode when we talked about it, because it's pretty cool. We really broke down entrapment. But most of the time, clients, law students, and this isn't a criticism. They don't get entrapment because they miss the first part. It's like, this is crap, man. These cops talk me. It was all the cops. Why is this guy? So every dope deal, if you follow that logic, would be entrapment. So every time you got an undercover cop talking to a dope dealer, they would, if you let it be that broad, it would be entrapment. Now, here's the real world danger of entrapment defenses. So one of the things that I would have to prove is that my client was not predisposed to commit the crime. So you guys are taking evidence, and immediately, what are the bells going off? If I say, look, my guy's not predisposed to commit this crime, it was only because of the government.
It sounds like character evidence to me.
Everything bad the guy ever did relevant to dope. Like, oh, that's interesting because you got caught when you were X age selling marijuana on the playground and then you did this. And I mean, all the crap that you can normally keep out. Now the jury gets to hear about it. So it's, you're on dangerous territory. You're opening, they call that opening the door.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it would have to be character evidence that's like, I mean, no, I get it. The door's open. You can kind of just talk about whatever, but I don't know. I don't like that. I don't like that.
Like it or not, man. That's yeah. Look, you could have, you might be able to make an argument. So there's different types of character evidence. So if I open the door, if say it's a drug case like DeLorean's and I say my defense is this was entrapment and it turns out my client has 5 prior drug trafficking offenses. That's all coming in.
Yeah.
The government's going to say, well, that's interesting. You weren't predisposed to commit. Were you predisposed to commit this one? And how about this one back in, 2020 and this one in 21? I imagine that your will to commit the crime was overborne by the government or whatever. You can see how that would be bad. Now, what if it's a murder case? Maybe not relevant.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not relevant. For what purpose are you offering the evidence? If you're offering the prior conviction of murder to show that this defendant is predisposed to commit a drug trafficking offense, that might be a bridge too far. So maybe not all character evidence, but a lot of it's coming in.
I just feel like, I mean, they're going to make the argument to bring anything character. Let's say it is the drug trafficking, like you're saying, and then they have like, oh, you have like these prostitution, these theft, just absolutely anything. I feel like they're just going to try to get in. And I mean, obviously I'd argue there's no relation to the case, but I don't know. I feel like, once they get some in, they're just going to get them all in. That's how I feel.
Here's what they don't teach you. Maybe they are teaching you in evidence class. The first guy, I've harped and harped and harped on you about this. For what purpose is the evidence being offered? And I put that in passive voice. But for what purpose is the defendant offering the evidence? For what purpose is the prosecutor offering the evidence? Only then can you analyze the case or analyze the evidence correctly. Mm-hmm. Because there's many purposes you could choose. And just because it's not relevant for one purpose, it may be relevant for another. So a murder conviction, or let's say a prior drug trafficking conviction, generally speaking, a prior conviction for drug trafficking is not going to come in to show a propensity for a defendant to commit the crime. But if I open up the door by raising an entrapment defense, well, now it's relevant for not to show that this guy's got a propensity to commit the crime exactly, but to show that the defense can't prove or to negate the defense's argument that this guy is not predisposed to commit the crime. Now, the drug trafficking conviction may also come in under 609 as a criminal conviction that is not 10 years, or it's within 10 years, if the client testifies. And now it's not coming in to show that once a drug dealer, all a drug dealer, but it's coming in for the purpose to show that under the rules of evidence, a prior felony conviction, by rule, it impacts somebody's credibility. Now, again, it doesn't mean you can do the touchdown dance all over the conviction. You don't necessarily get to go into the details of it. Because then you start straying into the realm of character. Look, we're going way deep into evidence, but this is how I would teach evidence if I did teach evidence. Although I sort of teach it upstairs, I guess.
Yeah.
I want to talk about entrapment by estoppel. You guys have had estoppel?
Yeah, we were actually just talking about this yesterday. The problem with law school is we're really good about getting the information for the test and all that, and then we haven't taken contracts in a year, and some of that stuff. We have to make room for other stuff. It's a storage cabinet. Right. We're
can only hold so much.
Yeah.
My math teacher used to say it's the pancake syndrome. So you flip a pancake, it sticks on the ceiling long enough to take the test, and it falls off. And I get it. But you know what? Back in your head, you've got these concepts, and that's the idea. So you may not remember it exactly, but you've heard the term estoppel at least.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Estoppel, general, E-S-T-O-P-P-E-L, right? Estoppel.
I can't sounds spell like a spelling save my bee. Life.
Estoppel is generally we'll call this equity, not the kind of equity that's out there politically, but it's an equitable concept where even though the law may permit something, may permit an argument, may permit a defense, or from the prosecutor's side, permit the prosecutor to argue something against a defense, because of somebody's prior actions, they're not allowed to assert the defense or push that theory into the courtroom. So, for instance, I'm trying to think of a good contract estoppel argument. Like if I induced you out with my own coercion or whatever to engage in the contract, then I can hardly say later that you didn't, or that you didn't have the intent to make the bargain with me, because it wouldn't be fair. I talked you into it, so therefore it's not fair.
Oh, no, I remember. It's like, I'm willing to buy your property if you will replace the roof on the house first. And so then you replace the roof on your house.
It's,
and
like
then,
relying on it.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
That's called detrimental reliance. Yeah, yeah. So that's a little different. But estoppel is like, I'm estopped, meaning I'm not allowed by a rule of law that doesn't, that's sort of outside the realm of what is normal. I'm not allowed, because of this rule, to assert a defense, to assert a claim that I ordinarily would be allowed to, because I did something that would make it unfair for me to do that, to challenge it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in your situation, like, I say, look, if you put a roof on your house, I'll buy your house. Then you put a roof on the house, and I say, I'm not going to buy the house. Now I it's not fair.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to claim later that the house costs too much because you put a roof on it, I'm not going to pay for it. Well, you only did that because I asked you to. Now I'm going to be stopped from arguing about that.
Yeah.
That may not be I'm sure there's contract professors do it better. Yeah. But entrapment by estoppel is sort of unique. This happens. I'll tell you, I had a case years ago for a bunch of tomato farmers. Turns out in Southern Ohio, we got lots of tomato farms. And it turns out in Southern Ohio, the ground's good and it's fertile and it's a great place to grow tomatoes. And these guys grow tomatoes. But they often would grow more tomatoes than people would want, and the tomatoes would rot in the field or whatever it would be. And it turns out also that you could buy crop insurance. Hmm. And crop insurance is designed to protect a farmer's crops if there's a natural disaster, say the fields flood. But it's down on the river, and a lot of times those fields flood. In fact, there's rains every spring or whenever they're planting that almost always the fields would flood. So you would almost always go get your crop insurance. So it didn't matter if you could sell your tomatoes because you got insurance to cover it. And the government provided the insurance. Now, that's where it gets dicey. So what is the government doing in the insurance business? Go ask Doge. I don't know. But the government was in the insurance business. So these guys every year would go and say, look, come inspect my fields. I've got my crops are ruined. And then every year the government inspector would come out and say, yeah, it looks like you didn't get your tomatoes. Here's your check. And people made a business out of it. And eventually, and this is back in 2008-ish when economic times were sort of on a downturn and sort of like it is now, you know, so like what people don't know is Obama did some of this stuff back in 2008 that is going on now in our government. Like, wait a minute, we're spending tons of money. We better go do a little bit of an audit. And some of these programs started to get looked at a little more carefully. And the government turns around and says, this is fraud. Every year you're growing tomatoes that you couldn't otherwise sell. And every year you're getting, it just, there happens to be some natural disaster. This is fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned around and said, well, wait a minute. You're telling, like, they came out and told me I was allowed to make this claim. They inspected it. You guys said I could do it. And I relied on that. So therefore, you're estopped, federal government, from arguing and charging my clients with this type of fraud because you gave me permission to do it. I'm not going to say whether it was successful or not, but that was the argument. Like, that's that set up my argument, and it's called entrapment by estoppel. So there's another, I make this argument often, and whenever there's a regulatory scheme, because this happens a lot in the real world. They don't teach you this in law school. Like, everybody thinks, well, the government's so good at, but like, they're terrible at most stuff. So there's a regulatory scheme, and the regulatory scheme, I don't get political very often, but I hate the administrative state because the administrative rulemakers make rules that stay the same, but how they interpret it changes. And then we have to defend crimes based on those violations of those rules. ATF's a perfect example. One day this is a crime, next day it's not. Depends on who's sitting in the big White House in Washington. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but you get it. And, you know, the government creates a regulatory scheme. They license an activity. And it turns out that activity violates a law over here. The argument is the government is stopped from prosecuting our client because they relied on a permission licensing scheme by the government to do what they're doing. It's a stretch, but it, every now and then you see that in the real world. So you lawyers out there, it's a little known defense called entrapment by estoppel, and it's out there. And you can sort of see it's like reverse entrapment.
Yeah.
I was entrapped because the government gave me permission, but the government's stopped from claiming that I was predisposed to commit the crime because they gave me permission to do it.
I feel like the state's defense is going to be like, you still did it in bad faith, though. Like, you knew, like, tomato farmer, for example, you've done this the past 10 years. It's like, yeah, it's like, you didn't see anything wrong with that. I understand.
And listen, I'm going to say, well, no, let's argue it out. And I'm going to say, look, fine, Mr. Government official. There's been a gal working for the Department of Agriculture down there. And every year I've known her, her name is whatever, call her Amy. Amy comes out every year. I go and say, hey, Amy, how's it going? You know, good. How's the kids? How's the family? Everything's good. Yep. Yeah, it looks like we had too much rain this spring again. Why don't you make a claim? Come on down, check out my fields. Amy comes down and they look around. It's like, yeah, it looks like it's pretty flooded to me. And this, your tomatoes don't work. Nah, they're not growing. Or they're destroyed. I can't sell these. These are soggy. I don't know. I don't remember all the details.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here's your $100,000. And good luck now. Hopefully it works out next year. You know?
but then it doesn't. And then you do it another year.
But Amy's there every year.
I know Amy's there every year. All right, but like at some point,
acting under the color of government authority to tell me it's okay to make an insurance claim.
Yes, but
now maybe Amy's guilty too, but she's not, or she's not getting charged. She's working for the government.
I know, but I mean, how many years go by before you're like, maybe this isn't for me? I mean,
If I'm Obama, if I'm in the White House, or if I'm the person in charge of the Department of Agriculture, I would say, well, this is stupid. We have to stop. We can't pay these claims anymore, so we're going to either crack down on what the criteria are for the insurance, or work better yet, we're going to get out of the insurance business altogether, because guess what? One of the best places to look for predictions for the future are insurance companies, because their wallet is on the table. Their credit card is on the table, ready to pay out. So insurance companies are great at this. And if an insurance company thought they could make money insuring tomatoes, you bet your ass they'd do it.
I mean, they're just the biggest casino. That's how I always view them as. They're just casinos.
Well, they're a necessary. I mean, they're a great product. But, you know, but once the government starts putting its hand on the scale of the insurance industry, then it gets all wonky. So this is where, like on the tomatoes. If it is, I would say let the market figure this one out. Look, if I'm in a private insurance company and I see I'm like, man, we can make some money insuring tomatoes down there. We better do that. Of course you're going to do it. Like we have a business upstairs. Man, we can make some money focusing on speeding cases. Let's do that. But if we can't make any money doing it, we're not going to do it. I mean, look, it just is a motivator. But once the government starts to do it, they're going to say, well, we're going to help out the farmers. And because they're sympathetic souls and, you know, they work hard and we traditionally want to promote farming in our country. So we're going to give them insurance at a reduced rate. And make it easy to make claims. All right. Well, now guess what the farmers did? They made claims, right?
Yeah.
And maybe they could have sold the tomatoes, maybe not. But they asked you if you could, if these were qualifying tomatoes, and they were. So look, how can you blame? You can just see where this goes. Yeah. Now, if it's a private insurance company, and I'm an adjuster for an insurance company. Anybody who's had to fight over the value of their car after it's been totaled, or their house after a flood or something, after the roof or whatever, hail damage is a great example. You know, their adjusters are going to come out and they're going to pull out their red pen and circle and like, wait a minute, we're not fixing that. And you had that before or whatever, you know, because their money is on the line.
Yeah.
And people hate insurance companies because they don't pay out. I'm like, well, maybe they shouldn't. And, you know, or you pay more for premiums to have premium insurance. You know, there's a line. So, and whenever the government puts its hand on that scale, it starts to get wonky. Mm-hmm. And look, the private industry is far from perfect, but at least you have recourse, because if they don't pay it, you can sue them.
Yeah.
You know, you can sue them. And
somebody's getting held accountable.
There's bad faith insurance claims all the time, and you can sue them. It's not perfect, and it's not great, and it's a pain in the backside. But you can at least, you're not suing the government. If you think you are going to the court of claims or something, you know, good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck. All right. But so that's the problem. It has nothing to do with entrapment, I guess, but we've gotten off.
But it's a little off the track, a little bit.
But look, what I didn't learn in law school along these lines is one of the first times I got into federal court on, say a tax case or a firearms regulatory case, not like a guy committed a crime with a gun, but maybe ran a gun shop and didn't follow the rules. Like, I was looking through like the code. I'm like, where's the law? Well, it's over here in the administrative code. I'm like, and you pull out like the the CFR, Code of Federal Regulations, and start looking through that crap, and your eyes are glazed over. Mm-hmm. You can see why big firms have lots of people reading that crap, because it's awful. And then you start to realize, well, wait a minute, there's a lot of play in the joints. And, you know, I had an ATF case where Tech Branch, there's something called Tech Branch, I think it's down in Kentucky, of the ATF, alcohol, tobacco, firearms, says, well, this is a crime. And I had a client who was saying, nuh-uh, I'm allowed to do it. I read these rules. I can do this. And the ATF, I mean, this went back and forth. We were at a table trying to negotiate this case, and my client and the agent were going at it. And the AUSA and I were just sitting there like this, watching this stuff. And we were buddies. They were going at it. And I'm like, well, it sounds to me like at least there is some reasonable disagreement. She's like, no, it's not. I know. And I'm like, well, I'm not so sure reading this rule. And then now you have other things like advisory opinions, or IRS gives opinions. So there's IRS opinion. So it gets dicey, and it gets hard to figure out where the crime is and where to look for the crime. And you have to swim around in this stuff to realize how confusing it all is. This is one of the reasons I hate the administrative state. I hate some of it's necessary, but I hate it mostly because I have to deal with it sometimes, and it sucks.
And all their entrapment by estoppel.
Entrapment by estoppel. So yeah, that's the that is entrapment. Now, if you think you're going out into the real world and you're going to hang your shingle and be a criminal defense lawyer and you're going to deal with entrapment as a defense, good luck. I've never had one, not a real one, not where I really thought I could go into court and say this guy was entrapped to commit this crime. It just doesn't happen very often. So it did to John DeLorean, though, and Cocaine Island. Check it out. So I think we beat that horse to death, as well as a couple others. Well, look.
The whole stable, you just went to the, you finished the first horse, you're like, oh, come here.
We talked about tomatoes. We talked about DeLorean. Yeah, it's great. Anyway. They don't teach you that in law school. If you like this series, check it out. Like it, share it, do what you do on the social media sites. Leave us a comment. Even if you don't like it, I don't mind the negative comments. I try to respond to them, or at least find some accord and agree with them. If you like the podcast, go to lawyertalkpodcast.com. You can subscribe there, and you'll get all the downloads as they come. This is Lawyer Talk. They don't teach you that in law school. Off the record, on the air, till now. By the way, we're sponsored by Circle 270 Media. Phenomenal. If you've got a podcast that you want, if you're in the Central Ohio area, even nationally, great podcast consultant, check out Circle 270 Media. Brett over there will take care of you.